Strategies for Regional Development. Geographically distressed, impoverished regions need a temporary helping hand to reach the bottom rung of the economic development ladder. Because these regions lack the benefits of easy transport, productive agriculture, or a low disease environment, they easily get trapped without saving and investment, and thereby fall ever further behind the rest of the world. An investment push is needed to establish a productive base in such places. The approach has been blocked for a generation, roughly since 1981, ever since the United States decided to cut back sharply on development aid as an active instrument of national policy. Since then, aid has been small-scale and has been under attack by ideological foes. The idea of helping laggard regions is routinely applied within countries. National governments channel funds to assist the regions falling behind and to ensure that all parts of the country have adequate infrastructure. Laggard regions within a country also benefit from internal migration. Young men often leave the less favored places in search of jobs in the more favored places and send home remittances to those left behind. Foreign aid should be seen as standard regional development policy for lagging regions, albeit for regions outside of the national boundaries of the aid giver. Still, the economic principles and policy motivations are roughly the same. Rich regions have an incentive to help poor regions within national borders, and rich countries have an incentive to help poor countries across national borders. Two successful regional development programs help us to understand how international development assistance can succeed. In the United States, one of the most famous projects to emerge from the New Deal was the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, which oversaw construction of a vast network of hydroelectric dams, flood control projects, and waterways for navigation in the Tennessee River Valley, covering 7 states in the southeastern United States. In addition to creating thousands of jobs in a time of profound economic crisis, the TVA provided the Southeast with critical infrastructure, including plentiful cheap electricity, improved channels for commercial navigation, and a large network of dams to protect the valley's inhabitants from floods. The TVA also successfully eradicated malaria, which had hitherto been endemic in the region, and significantly improved environmental conservation practices in the area. The TVA was, in fact, part of a more general New Deal approach to fight poverty in the rural United States through public investments. The Rural Electrification Administration, REA, established in 1935, provided government credits and financial guarantees to rural cooperatives in order to extend electrification to American farms, ranches, and other rural locations. The effect was galvanizing, even in the midst of the Great Depression. In 1935, only 11.6% of U.S. farms had electricity. By 1940, that number had reached 30.4%, and by 1950, 77.2% of farms had access to electricity. In 1949, the REA was similarly empowered to finance the extension of telephone service to the rural United States. In just one decade, service coverage doubled from 36% in 1949 to 64% in 1959. This role of the federal government in financing the uptake of infrastructure in rural America is rarely acknowledged by free market ideologues, and it certainly is not mentioned by U.S. and World Bank officials who have championed the full privatization of utilities in rural Africa and other impoverished regions. More recently, the world's largest regional development project is the Western China Development Project, by which the Chinese government is spreading economic development beyond the booming coastal regions to the lagging regions in the interior. Since 2000, the Chinese government has invested more than 1 trillion yuan, $125 billion, in Western China development. The government has invested heavily in infrastructure. It has built 250,000 kilometers of highway and 4,000 kilometers of railroad, foreign investment promotion, education, and environmental conservation, reforestation mainly, to help the Western regions catch up. The results have been impressive. Between 2000 and 2006, Western China's production nearly doubled, equivalent to annual growth rates of more than 10% over that period. At the same time, massive migration from the interior to the coastal provinces and from the rural areas to the cities has also helped the development process in two ways. It has provided jobs and improved incomes for more than 100 million migrants. Many of these migrants were unemployed or working at very low productivity in their home villages. Second, part of that increased income has been sent back to the villages to support local consumption, business formation, and investments in homes and farms. The costs, however, are high, since the mass migration has very often meant separated families, and even mothers and children left behind in the villages, with the husbands not seen again.